country music superstar Toby Keith needs little introduction on the musical side of things, having tallied 20 number one hits along with 21 additional songs that have made their way into the top 10. But what you may not be as familiar with is the tremendous amount of success the Oklahoma native has had in horse racing since first getting into the business in the early 1990s. He now breeds and he races under his Dream Walkin' Farms and is kind enough to spend a little time with me here today. Toby, thanks so much for taking the time, my
friend. Glad to do it, bro.
Yeah, appreciate it. Let's start from the beginning, and let's start on the musical side of things. Your story, at least the early years, to me, is one of the great stories of persistence and determination and that unwavering will to succeed. Mm-hmm. Take me back. It wasn't always easy.
No, it wasn't as easy, but we worked in nightclubs in the southwest part of the U.S., Texas, Colorado, New Mexico, Oklahoma for 5 or 6 years, playing 5-6 nights a week, making about, now this was in late 80s, early 90s, so, you know, we're making $2,500 a week, splitting it between six guys, buying gas, paying for insurance, buying motel room. So you're really just sending about $280-$300 to the house every week, you know? And you got a family and everybody's going, are you crazy? And then, fortunately, I got a recording contract with Mercury, and it was more blessed to even have, should have been a cowboy, be the first single, and it got the doors open. And as soon as I got things rolling, had a couple of hits, the label got in a fight. The president and the vice president. Vice president signed me. President had some other acts. They got in an argument over what artists they should pursue, and they busted up and they sent the vice president to another label called Polydor, and he took me with him. Well, then they needed an album every year to hit their bottom line because all their acts were new acts except me. Then he retired and I went to A&M. Then I came back to Mercury, and then that's when hell broke loose. I was back with the original guy that was fighting with my guy, and we were arguing over what music to release, and they turned an album down, and I went and bet my whole career on it. I said, either drop me or put this album out, and they dropped me. They didn't put the album out. So I did something that they said no one had ever done. I went back in and gave them a couple hundred grand, bought the album, went over, sold it to DreamWorks, and signed with DreamWorks, and it was How You Like Me Now album, and it sold 3.5 million, was album of the year.
And the rest is history.
Yeah,
you know, people might not realize that even before you went through that journey, that you weren't even in the music business. You were working in the oil fields.
Yeah.
Spent some time playing football, mm-hmm, right? Defensive end, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about those years.
Well, when I was working in the oil field, the oil field crashed in 83, and I was just playing weekends, like, with a bar band, just a garage band. And I was writing songs, and we were just playing, like, getting $35 a piece to go in and free beer, play Friday night, Saturday night in the little bitty taverns, you know, and then work all week in the oil field. And in 83, 84, the oil field busted and went completely bust. And I was like, I don't, other than the oil field and singing and writing songs, I don't really do much good. I don't really know what to go pursue, you know. And where do you start over at, you know? And I could weld a little bit, and I thought, you want to be a welder or what? And I thought, you know what? Let's give music. I do it good, so I write good songs and sing a little bit. Let's just go see what's out there. So we packed up. I got five guys that wanted to hit the road. We got a booking agent out of San Antonio, and he started booking us 5 and 6 nighters, and we just started hitting the bars and working a different town every week.
So where did the love of horse racing begin for you?
My dad would take me to the track, and he loved to go to the horse. He loved to go to the racetrack, and his best friends growing up in a small town raised their own. We're in the horse business. Their nephew was a trainer, and the oldest one, EJ, had some mares and would and would always have a little speedball going somewhere, you know. And they hung out with old man Von Heemann and Van Berg and Paul Smith, the Mole Cats, man. So he would always have three or four new 2-year-olds come out every year. And so my dad would go watch their horses run, and he really enjoyed it. And I told him, I said, tell him buy your horse and I'll buy it for you. So he did. And they said, well, just buy half in the best one we've got this year. And they named it Jack Branch after EJ's dad. And the first start at Remington Park, Maiden Special Weight, he win. Easy.
Wow.
And it made my dad so happy that I bought three or four more, and then bought a couple of mares, and then built a farm, and just kept. So from 97 on, I've been in it.
Yeah, and now you're playing at a very high level, winning a lot of races with your dream walking farm. Could you ever see yourself playing at this level when you first started out?
Well, I knew I'm very competitive, and I knew once I got in it. I know that if you're breeding 100 mares, I get a bigger kick and a bigger thrill out of raising a good baby, you know what I mean? And, I mean, you got your mare, you create the breeding, you raise the baby, and then, you know, smack, smack goes out and makes $1 million. Reckless Jerry runs in all the big races at Oakland, you know. Cactus Ridge, undefeated 2-year-old, and a stallion for 10 years. You know, the horses that I buy and run are exhilarating and fun, but there's always a special thing when you got a homebred, when they go, here's the trainer, here's the jockey, owned by and bred by. It's like, yeah, that's who did that.
Yeah, it means something special,
it
doesn't
does.
It?
It does, it really does.
Yeah, it kind of holds a little extra meaning.
And the horse business is a select few of people that do it, and it's for the most part, it's really, really good quality people that you want to run into at the track. You know, you meet, like, I deal with Nick Zito a lot.
Yeah.
He's salt of the earth, you know? And I know there's people in every business that, my business especially, there's a-holes everywhere. I try not to be one because we don't need another one. But so when I find guys like Zito and that, Jack Van Berg, the Von Heemels, people like that, I try to keep them in good stock.
Yeah, Nick Zito, one of my favorite people in the business, right or wrong?
Right.
Right?
No question.
No doubt about it. He's simply tremendous. Why dream walking?
It's a song, and about the time I built my farm, that song had been a hit. It was the name of an album, and I just thought it made a great song I wrote called Dream Walking, and I thought, that's what you're really doing in the horse business is you're walking, you're dream walking, right?
Yeah.
You're trying to get there every day, and it's, I know a lot of people that have come and went, but if you stay through the low times, it's because you love it.
What do you like most about being in the horse business?
I like when it's at Remington Park, it's wintertime, I'm home, and I know 4 nights a week I got something to do. I like to go get in my suite, fire up the other tracks on the screen, maybe get the football game going on a screen, get a couple other tracks going, walk out on the deck, and watch them run. And it's just as exhilarating to win a $5,000 claimer as it is win a $100,000 stake. You know, when they're coming for home and they go to the front, that's it. To hear the hoofs pound coming down the lane, going down the paddock and watching them saddle, seeing how well a horse come back off of a layoff, watching a baby bloom. You know, you go 0 for 3 on a 2-year-old and you miss a month while you're switching tracks, and all of a sudden somebody goes, this little 2-year-old's turned into a 3-year-old all of a sudden. He's put on 100 pounds and 150 pounds, and all of a sudden you're running at him again. So just the whole – I've had horses didn't win till they was 4 years old, and then they won 4 stakes. But I've had them go undefeated as a 2-year-old and never won another race. So you never know. It's always like the weather. It's going to change. You know, if you keep winning and keep running, you're going to get beat. And if you keep losing and keep running, sometimes you'll get cheap enough and win.
It's funny you mentioned that feeling of watching your horse come down the stretch, and I've been involved with a couple of horses too, and there's nothing like that feeling of watching them cross the finish line first. And it, like you said, it doesn't matter if it's a stakes race or a $5,000 claimer. Yeah. in a little while, we're sitting here in your tour bus now, in a little while, you're going to walk on stage at Rupp Arena here in Lexington, and you're going to walk out to thousands of fans that love you. Any comparison between that feeling, that rush that you get when you walk on stage, and the rush that you get when your horse crosses the finish line?
I guess the rush you could compare it to is if you do a surprise appearance, you know, like Van Halen was playing one time, Sammy Hagar was with him, and he's an old friend of mine, and they were playing close to my house, and he said, I love this bar, my song, I love this bar. He goes, I do that in the middle of the show acoustically, so won't you show up tonight in front of your hometown and walk out there while I'm doing it and give me the old, this is not the way it goes, and then show me how it's done kind of thing. I said, okay, now you walk out there, that's a big explosion, you know, that's what we call a pop, and those kind of things might compare, but when you do a show every night like we do, it's just, you know what's first, you know what's last, you know what's next, and we just get out there and get it. But I think the reason the comparison between a steak and a $5,000 clamber, it just happens to be the race that's in front of you, right? So, it's a $5,000 clamber winning, but it's a $5,000 race, right? Yeah. They're still running against his competition. So it's like watching a junior high basketball game, NBA game. You're still pulling for your team.
Toby, let me brag on you and Dreamwalking for just a minute and all the success you've had recently. Right. The past 3 years, last year you finished ranked 23rd in North America by number of wins with 57. Don't know if you realize that
or not.
I
didn't know that.
In 2016, it was even better. You were ranked number 12 in North America with 81 wins. 2015 was pretty good, too. You were ranked 15th with 78 wins. In 2016, when you had that great year, ranked number 12, you're ahead of names like Windstar and Calumet and Mike Rapoli, some of the most historic names we have on the ownership side. What's that mean?
Till you just told me, it didn't mean jack.
What's it mean now?
Well, it's nice to know, but that, like I said earlier, it's a tough business. I would say volume is probably what got us there, but I mean, I'd rather have 12 wins on that list and win a Breeders' Cup or something, but I race so many homebreds that we're bound to win some of them, so I'm not patting myself on the back too much for it.
What's your operation look like now? How many brood bears? How many?
I've got some really good guys, that friends of mine that love racing that are partnering with me now, and I never had any partners, and I pinhooked for a long time, and a lot of the horses, if you look back, the horses we pinhooked, a lot of them, you know, went on to win great big races, you know. I think 2 years ago I sold, I know the horse that ran last year, he ran in the Derby and he won the Oklahoma Derby.
Mm-hmm. He was a pinhook?
He's a trap shot.
Okay.
And I bought him, and I like to buy 10 or 12 and sell 4 or 5 and get a little cash off the table and then run the ones that maybe had baby problems or weren't quite ready to be, you know, two-year-old. They weren't very precocious, but it seemed like every time I sold some, they went on to be great horses, and the ones I kept weren't, my homebreds always outrun them. So I finally just said, you know what, I'm going to cut my broodmare band back. So I cut back about 80 broodmares in the last 3 years. I've weeded them down. I've kept my best 20, 21 mares, and I'm leaving them over here in Kentucky. And then I've got about 10 or 15 at home and a couple stallions there that I'm trying for Okie bread, and then I'm just going to race all my yearlings I buy. We're just going to make a run at them. We're going to say a little more Tiffany for a little while.
Yeah, there you go. Is it a little more fun for you to watch those horses grow up and race as opposed to breeding to sell?
Yeah, I never did breed and sell. I don't know. If you're going to sell, you got to sell them all, I think. You got to be willing, I think. I never found a perfect mixture of racing and breeding. You kind of end up kind of like the way I did in pinhooking. You end up racing the ones you got stuck with. And if you're going to breed and sell, you have to be willing to give your best one away too. And I didn't want to make those decisions. It would kill me if I took my top stakes mare and bred her to Malibu Moon and sold it for $300,000 or $400,000 at one of the Kentucky Derby. It's really challenging business, and that's what I think. If you're smart about it and do the, and it's your hobby and you don't look at it as a, I don't make my living doing that, And so I keep it all in pretty good check.
Speaking of selling horses, you had a pretty good experience here last year at the Keeneland September sale with your daughter, Crystal.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that story.
Well, she had some money that she wanted to invest, her and her husband. They said, we got some money we want to invest. And I said, well, I've got a really good mare. You buy a stud feed, and I'll foal share with you, and we'll just sell the baby. And we bought a, she bought a Bernardini, and I mated it to Cactus Ridge's sister, a Giant's Causeway, really nice, big colt, filly that was injured, and Giant's Causeway out of Double Park, which was Cactus Ridge's first dam, and everybody thought she was going to be a world beater, and I really like Giant's Causeway broodmares, and I said, let's give this a run. So they bred Bernardini, had a really nice colt, and somebody gave a lot of money for it. I don't remember how much it was, $200,000 or $300,000 or something.
But I think it was $255,000.
Yeah, $255,000.
Yeah.
So she basically, her first horse deal was successful, so I got a hook in her now.
Is she working with you now?
No. But she got excited. And then she bought another one the same year, and I had a little speedball named Seeking Miss Shelley that ran down at New Orleans and ran Louisiana for Joe Duhon about 6 years. Won some stakes and was just a burner. Just could get it. And always had stomach problems. I think she only had 24 starts in 5-year career. And hit the board like 19 times and won a bunch of stakes and just could, if she got out on front, they couldn't catch her. So I bred her to Malibu Moon. We had a colt, and he had a few problems in his front end. And so you knew they was going to pick him apart to sell. So I said, sell the good one, make your money, get it all off, get your money off the board, and then we'll run this one. You'll have a horse. So she does have a horse to race. She's got a nice Malibu Moon colt.
You think she'll be as into it as you are?
No. But she'll enjoy it. It'd be something fun to do.
Especially if they keep winning.
Yeah. If I'd have bombed on her, she'd have been saying, I want my money back.
She probably would have. Toby Keith with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We'd be remiss if we didn't spend a few minutes talking about Cactus Ridge, because he was so good to you. You mentioned earlier, undefeated as a juvenile, a perfect 4-for-4, one of the favorites for the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, and then he ends up getting hurt after a workout a week before the race.
Yeah.
You've experienced the highest highs and the lowest lows with that one horse alone.
Yeah, and he... You know, when he went by 15 at Canterbury and went to Ellis Park Juvenile, he won the Juvenile at Canterbury, and we went to Ellis Park. All the Kentucky horses were coming in for that. And the program even discredited us. We showed up on my plane. We came in there to watch it, and they wouldn't let us in the – at Ellis Park, they wouldn't let us in the Silks Lounge because we had jeans on. And so – I said, well, you know what? We'll just go down to the beer tent by the winner's circle.
That works.
And they said, okay. So even being a celebrity and even having one of the top horses in there that won the juvenile previous by 15 lengths, they were just gonna look down their nose at us. So I said, let's just all go hang out at the beer tent. Then I looked at the program, and it said, disregard his last out. It was against weaker foes. And I was going, okay. Well, then he goes under a hand ride. And may have broke the track record or something there. He blows them away. So they all come down, bring the press down, and they're all saying, come up to we're going to have a big drink with all the owners. I go, we got jeans on. Tell them come to the beer tent.
Well played.
So then he goes to, let's see, goes. He broke his maiden at Arlington, win by 15 at Canterbury, win by about 6 or something there at Ellis. Then he won the went back to Arlington and won the Washington Arlington Grade 3. And we were 4-for-4 and one of the favorites, I think Coovy. We were going to go against Coovy that year maybe?
Yeah, I think that's right.
And it was going to be a showdown between him and Coovy, who could get that extra. Was it another 16th or an 8th or something?
Yeah.
We were going to have to run the Breeders' Cup. And they didn't think he could get a mile. And never changed leads, any 4 races, never in second place and never under the whip. And I was like, what are they going to do when they ask this horse finally? Because he could just get to the lead and wait on everybody and then just run off from them down the lane. I was like, how's he going to respond when they ask him for something? And then he broke down. It was really tragic. But Johnny T.L., my buddy Jones, Johnny Jones, he stood him over at his farm. We got over 100 mares to him, and Hot Cha Cha made a million, and I think there was a filly named Portofino run fourth in the Breeders' Cup Turf.
Mm-hmm.
Hollywood Hit might have been one of the fastest sprinters in North America, won five or six high-graded sprints. And then I had Seeking Miss Shelley. He was always his horses. He's one of those horses that his babies tried. He was hard to handle, and when you'd look at them, their eyes would they'd cut their eyes at you and stuff, and would stomp and kick, and a lot of them were hard to handle. They weren't very tame animals, and you could tell that his progeny had the same thing because they always wherever level they fit, they always tried. And I've had dealt with other sires that I believed in and bred to, and none of them, you know. I always said, I had one sire, I said, they all run the same. They get out of the gate last and get worse, you know.
Yeah, not what you're looking for.
Yeah, his did. His he tried at every level. They were useful horses at whatever level they ran at.
You mentioned another name earlier, too, Smack Smack.
Yeah.
Who has been very good for you. Yeah. I think he's, what, just shy of $1 million
right
now?
Yeah, he's like $40.
Yeah.
$40,000 or something.
Yeah, I think it's even less than that. It might even be $19,000.
Yeah. Well, he's a little long in the tooth. I wanted to keep that mare. I bought his second dam over here for $35,000, and I bought it off of the big Canadian farm up there. And the people who they sent down here to sell it said it was their favorite mare, big old dapple gray mare, and she was in Fold of Whiskey Wisdom, and I think I gave $32,000 for or something, and they came over and thanked me. Said, we didn't want to sell this mare, and she was a with approval, and she was the only mare in the pedigree. She's only filly in the pedigree under her first dam. The other three were colts. She only had four babies, and two with approval male colt stakes winners. She's a with approval, made $45,000, and then maybe another colt by somebody else, another sire that was a stakes winner. So there's like two or three stakes winners out, four babies, and she's a full to two of these with approvals, and the pedigree, I loved it. And so, well, she red bagged and didn't have my Whiskey Wisdom, and then I came back and bred her 13, 14, 15 times. Well, when I bred her to Victor Gallup, that's one of the fillies I kept, and that's Smack Smack's mother.
Wow.
So the old gray mare showed up.
Yeah, she did okay.
Yeah.
She did okay. If Toby Keith can win one race, what is it?
Man, I don't think there's anything more prestigious than the Kentucky Derby, but if you want money, you got to go to Dubai. Everybody wants to win that for the cash, but I would certainly take the Derby, but Derby or the Breeders' Cups would be the race I'd want to win, I think.
If you could sing one song, what would it be?
Well, I say this because it was my first one. It should have been a cowboy, and because if it wouldn't have been, if it should have been a cowboy, you might not have heard that next 50 song.
Right? Yeah, that's exactly right.
It kicked all the doors down. So,
with everything that you've been able to accomplish in the horse racing side of things, what are you most proud of?
Just that that we were able to, the time I put in to reading books. Dr. Bill Lockridge gave me his whole library before he passed away. Not his entire library, but all of his breeding books years ago. And he knew I was fascinated with reading pedigrees and understanding bloodlines. So I asked him a million questions. I guess he got tired of answering me. So he gave me a bunch of old books, and I went back and read every one of them, got on the internet, and I started to track. I thought, you know what? To have a great horse eye, you're going to have to be around horses every day. But to understand pedigrees and stuff, you can read. And I read for years and years and years and years. And if I went to college on it, I'd only went 4 years. I stayed on it for 12, 13 years. So I read and read and read and just kept wanting to know more about it. I was fascinated with it. And I think to be able to be a first-generation horse owner and breeder and have the kind of wins we had as a breeder and running homebreds mostly. There's people around the track that are my friends that come by and go, you just know when he shows up with his two-year-olds that in the next 6 months after we get here, you're going to have run against some good horses because he's going to breed some good horses, you know.
take me inside your house for a minute. When I walk in, I'm sure we're going to see plenty of memorabilia on the musical side of things. Yeah. But how about on the horse racing side? What am I going to see there?
Well, some of it, I've got a giant man cave. So most of my big horse stuff's in my man cave. But we keep all of the local stuff up in my suite at Remington Park. So I've got a lot of smack stuff up there. I've got a lot of Cactus Ridges stuff up there. Stuff that people, other horse people walk in and visit my suite, they'll know from being, if they're Remington Park people and run that circuit, you know. That Remington Park circuit's kind of Remington, Oakland, Prairie Meadows. That's kind of the three where everybody moves their horses. So that circuit right there, I kind of keep my Prairie Meadows, my Oakland, and my Remington Park stuff in there because those are the people that will drop by. I actually have a horse run at Remington Park right now named Vanberg.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I named, when Jack passed away, I happened to have
a
horse.
What a tribute.
Yeah, I named it Vanberg. And I got another one called Me and Jack.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Great. How do you keep up with horse racing when you're on the road so much?
Equine Line.
You're supposed to say Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, I don't always have that on my plane, but I can always get Equine Line.
I know you got a busy schedule.
Thanks,
one
man.
More question, I'll let you go. What's the future hold now? What are the goals you're still looking to accomplish?
Well, like I said, I simplified the horse business, so we're going to go a little more. We're going to run at them a little more instead of breed as much. And in the music business, we're just status quo. We're just going to keep. I write every year, and at the end of the year, I put albums together. It just turns out my stuff's still country, and they don't play country anymore. But but I'm not going to write the other stuff. So, but it's been a great 25 years, and like that you're going to see tonight, it looks just like it would have 10 years ago when we get in there. So as long as that part's going, I'll be out here. And when it don't, I'll just spend more days at the Keeneland sale.
All right, good job. Keep doing what you're doing, and thanks for taking the
time,
Toby.
Thank
you.